because not only is Ruth in the lineage of Jesus, born in a manger in Bethlehem, but they are now going back, and it's a famine that they're in. And so that's why I mentioned, and why you'll see and hear, again, food bringing our second Advent theme, peace, into the picture. And peace is an interesting concept because I think there's a number of different things that we talk about in hopes of finding peace. I did a little research myself. I think that it's kind of fun to see and hear how people make decisions and they say, I'm at peace with it, right? And they're communicating something deep within themselves. I don't know how to fit in it, so I'll just say it, all those who are from the 60s, you know. I have no idea what that was all about. But it was not my generation, but it held the word peace. There's a $395,000 cabin up by Onaway that's for sale. I found it advertised, savor peace. That's why you buy that cabin, I guess. So if you want it, I'll let you know. Probably can get it discounted because there's no power. And I'm just hoping and praying that no one here owns that. That would be embarrassing. I asked some children who talk about peace in ways in which they go shh or use the word quiet. The dictionary talks about it, freedom from disturbance. They use the words tranquility, calm. Often in the context of war, we hear the word peace, right? And that's something that becomes then highlighted because it's a longing. Peacekeepers. It's also referred to in terms of an agreement or harmonious thing among people. There's lots of ideas of peace. I have a story for you here about a man named Alfred. And Alfred, way back years ago, actually found his obituary, even though he didn't die. Now, it's a long story, but Alfred read his own obituary because they made a mistake. And he was a salesperson, and what he did is he sold dynamite. And Alfred actually was referred to in the obituary, much to his dismay, as a merchant of death, because of what dynamite did to different people. Well, this disturbed Alfred so much that he became an advocate for peace to change his life, now that he read, accidentally, what they wrote about him, thinking he died. This man's name is Alfred Nobel, who is the creator of the Nobel Peace Prize. I also think that there is a good way to define peace, before we move on here, in light of an elderly lady who knew she was going to breathe her last on that day. She was fragile, she was weak, and she was gathering her family. And one of her children, next to her bed, was just holding her hand. And the elderly, fragile mother who was about to die turns her head over on the pillow and almost in a whisper says to her daughter, "This is kind of exciting." And I can't help that somebody who lies on their deathbed and says that has found peace. Yeah? I don't know. Can't deny that, I don't think. Last week, we had the first Advent candle lit of hope, and we explored the journey of Ruth and Naomi with Ron DeFries, and he shared Ruth chapter 1, and he started with that quote from the Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of time, it was the worst of time, and at the end, he said, story to continue, and it does. Ruth and Naomi are back in Bethlehem, and now they are there, still under the circumstances of just living on hope. Their husbands have died, and now we've got two in-laws, because Orpah stayed back, and Ruth and Naomi settle in this place, in which Ruth has no relatives. It's an interesting storyline, because for many of us, we can't fathom what it would be like in that culture, in that state, being women in a foreign land, not being related in Ruth's circumstances anyways, and then trying to find out how to survive, let alone live, in a land where they know they don't have any foothold. So it's a hard picture to grasp amongst all the things we like, because we like being at home. We don't like to be in a foreign territory, as much as it may be a land of opportunity or someone says you can make yourself feel at home. But we always like being at home, not on the opposing player's team's field, so to speak. We also like our family and our friends and the people who are around us to make us feel safe. And as you read in this story, Ruth was not necessarily in a position where she felt safe due to the fact that we hear Boaz talk about protecting her, instructing his staff to not touch her and to help her along and not embarrass her, as we read in Ruth chapter 2. Back in Bethlehem under the stars where the baby manger was years later, we see Ruth taking some gutsy moves, but doing it out of faith, which is why in our confession this morning, I wanted to read a little about the role of our faith in our life, and that we make sure that we continue to be fervor and pursue it, much like Ruth. They've gone through a lot. And before we move on, I suppose we should stop and talk about not how little they had, but maybe in terms of how we pursue peace, especially at a time of year like this, with trying to gather enough. How much is enough, people? It's a question I often ask myself. Many people who pass away with millions of dollars or who have great estates and so on. And that's just the term of material items, enough. But how much is enough? I had an old friend who actually blurted out right away without me saying what I was talking about, 4 million. I went, what? He said, 4 million. He says, I did the math. He was a businessman. That's what a person needs, 4 million. Oh, end of that conversation. But are we talking about money? Are we talking about food? Are we talking about recognition? How much is enough? In terms of Ruth and Naomi's story, we see that there's a great deal that's lacking in Ruth chapter 2 still. Even though we know how the story goes, they start empty, and at the end of Ruth, they're full. And this is all because of how God plays in their lives. And we don't talk about just money. We talk about a fulfillment that we know is life abundant, that is rich in terms of not finances or material items, but in inner peace. And that's where Naomi ends up, as a believer in God, as a follower of God, and seeing Ruth pursue faithfulness in ways that's extraordinary. She sees the peace coming through Ruth by what happens in chapter 2. And hope is necessary to move in this direction, which is why we looked at it, the first Advent candle in Ruth 1, to get to the point of where they now see peace in their lives because of God's faithfulness to them. And Ruth finds it near the fields of Bethlehem amongst the workers who belong to her now dead father-in-law relative, Boaz. Her faithfulness in her hope leads to her peace as she found it in the food that offered lay in there in the field, and later on that she partook of, and then later on took back to her mother-in-law. She still doesn't have enough. Oh, if you read Ruth 2, you may argue and say, sure she did. She ate as much as she could, and she still had left over. But we're talking about how we think enough in terms of what about tomorrow? What about next week? We're still a foreigner, a young girl, with dead husbands that now live in a foreign land amongst great needs. What have you done for me lately? Could be a theme that rings true in terms of having enough in the fields of Boaz, under the stars of Bethlehem, on that day. But that's not what it's about. It's not about having enough of this or that or the other thing, but it's about finding the hope and then leading to finding the peace, which is why we are here today on the second Advent. And it comes in a sense of communion. It comes in something beautiful, like what enriches us, not just physically, but spiritually. Rest assured, when Ruth came home, Naomi knew that God was being faithful because of the story that Ruth told her. Naomi was still at home not knowing what was going on. And to our dismay, the writer of the Bible in Ruth chapter 2 actually uses words that some Christian people like to correct. It's kind of funny because it says she just by chance landed in Boaz's. It says that right there in the scriptures, which everybody goes, oh, there's nothing that happens by chance. Now the Bible's telling us it happened by chance. Well, there's much to debate, but we know that in the end, we see God's hand in the lives of a person like Ruth, who is struggling to be faithful in the hope that she had been given. And then this turns to Naomi, who now sees how God is again working in their lives, despite that she proclaimed, just call me bitter lady last week. Just call me a bitter old woman, because look at all the things that are happening that are destroying my life. My husband dead, my son's dead, and now out of famine I'm driven back to Bethlehem. All this stuff that made her bitter and had led to a little bit of hope now rests in peace. Hard to explain that she made a decision that she was at peace with, or that she found peace as if she was digging it up somewhere, but that in her life, in her trajectory, she had sensed too that God was now still in the picture despite of all that was happening around her. And despite they only had food for the day and an abundant amount, mind you, that she was fulfilled with peace. And this is what comes from faith in a resurrected Lord who offers us. So it'd be a good day to have communion, but all the Advents would be good, in which we see the bread and the wine given as symbols to help us to remember and believe. Because in our faith, we have hope where we find peace. And without faith, peace becomes elusive. I love the unfinished story because many people like to give testimonies and say, well, this happened and that happened and I'm a bitter guy too. And then this happened and this is how it ended. And here I am today, living proof. This is right in midstream where Ruth and Naomi have not seen a completed picture of how God's story will finish. There is no sense of how it's going to end, even though we do know how it's going to end, yet they can rest in a sense of peace because of what has been given to them, a sign, much like the bread and the wine. Despite the hardships of life, this is who Christ is in our life, an unfinished story, one that I'm reminded of again with the words that we see in that song we sang, Peace Like a River. I asked the team, can we sing that? They said, sure, because of the story that it holds, and some of you may know it. Horatia Spafford was the words at the bottom of the song. He wrote those words. He's an old businessman, lawyer, back from Chicago, and the fire destroyed his business. Basically, he grew it again, and God was faithful, and it survived, and basically ended up leading to a time where they ended up sending the family back, the wife and the children back to where they came from, and the husband stayed back because of some business matters. And when the boat left in a return trip with the wife and the daughters, it actually crashed to another ship and sunk, and the four daughters had died. This is without mentioning the fact that they had a son that died earlier back in the day from pneumonia. So now all five children have perished, and the wife is back in England and telegrams her husband saying, I'm the only one that survived. What do I do? And it was this man who then immediately wrapped up his business dealings and jumped on the next ship back to see his wife and mourn with her, only to find out the captain knew of the story, called Horatia Spafford up to deck and said, this is where your family perished, where your children stopped living. This is where it happened, about here in this part of the sea. And it's right there that Horatia put these words, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Do you hear Ruth singing those words? Do you hear her saying those words? Or maybe it's a little easier to hear Naomi, who's from Bethlehem, but has still gone through dire straits, speaking those words, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Perhaps last week, during the hope time, she may have not said it. Maybe she would have. But today, she has sensed from Ruth's story of haphazardly landing in Boaz, a distant relative of her former husband's field, and then finding that she was able to be gleaning more food than they ever thought, and then to see that she had been cared for and loved and had over for dinner. And this whole story of that day in the fields in Bethlehem rings true of the peace that we also hear when we hear the baby Jesus born in those fields under the starry skies of Bethlehem. Let me finish with this. As we read Ruth 2, Boaz, the kinsman redeemer, knowing that the kinsman portion is a person who is a leadership position who can buy back, who can redeem people in that day and age and culture. Much like an owner of slaves can redeem them from the horrible life. And this is a reflection in the future of who Jesus is, God becoming human nature for us in order to buy us back, to redeem us. Ruth is the character in chapter 2, the foreigner who is into stuff over her head, peculiar circumstances and dangerous environment in which she is a young woman, have lost her husband now in the fields, very vulnerable, represents the foresight of those who encountered baby Jesus in those fields as well. Big risk, big danger to proclaim him as king amongst all the political unrest that was going on was crazy. Vulnerable would be the best word to describe the wise men and the shepherds as they gathered around to celebrate the king has been born. And then there's Naomi, who finds peace through food, through the story of the food that Ruth brought home, foresighting the communion that Jesus held up to help us to remember and believe so that we, in our faith, may find peace. Let me pray with you.